Hello, and welcome to Side A of Episode 47 of the Strong Style Story Podcast here at the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, at least for now. We'll get into that later. With me today, my co-host, the OG, the co-founder, Chris Damasceno. Chris, what's up, brother?
Hey, not a whole lot. Happy 30-year anniversary to us.
This is our third anniversary show, which is why we're doing a Side A and Side B. Side A, of course, is going to be recapping, well, you know, the World Tag League they just wrapped up and the Road to Tokyo Dome shows that just finished this weekend as we're recording. And we're also going to do our Wrestle Kingdom 13 preview on this side. And then Side B is going to be us ruminating on the third year of this show, as well as the third year, the whole of 2018 for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So we are going to split this into two halves. So not to overwhelm everybody, because I know personally, like, after, you know, most podcasts, once you hit the hour 30 mark, I start getting twitchy a little bit, and it's like 2 hours about all I'm willing to go. But I don't know how long we'll actually go on this, so we're just going to play it safe and cut it down into two parts. So, hey, Chris, we just wrapped up the entire year of New Japan.
Yeah, that, we're done. Again, just as of this morning on December 15th, when we have been doing this recording, it's afternoon here now. But yeah, the calendar year for New Japan Pro Wrestling has been wrapped up.
It's done. We have no more shows to talk about for 2018. So, but we did just wrap up a month long tournament, and then two ancillary shows after that. So, let's go to that month long tournament, the World Tag League. Of course, the winners, for the second year consecutively, Evil and Sonata.
Yes, sir.
Won it all. They tied up at the top of the block at 20 points with the reigning IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, the Gorillas of Destiny, and they won it for the second year on the trot. Now, this makes them the second repeat winners, and you could make a case for there's been 2.5 repeat winners.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, prior to last year, Togi Makabe and Tomoki Honma won. They won two in a row. But prior to that, the very first of these tournaments under the World Tag League banner, which was in 2012, was won by Sword and Gun.
Yeah.
It was the team of Hirooki Goto and Machine Gun Carl Anderson. Well, then Anderson won it in 2013 with Doc Gallows, of course, and then Goto won it with Katsuyori Shibata in 2014. So they seem to like these repeat winners.
Yeah, definitely the case. Another fairly big accomplishment in its own right. I believe this is the third year in a row in which GOD has made the finals, even if they didn't necessarily win.
That's true. You know what? That's true. That is true. I neglected to mention that. Yeah, that's true. A bit of ignominy in all this is, unfortunately, we kind of saw it coming, but I was kind of hoping you get at least one win. The Wooden Spoon, of course, going to K-Dojo's Ayato Yoshida and Young Lion Shota Umino. I think it's kind of whack they didn't get at least one win. I mean,
yeah,
surely they could have pulled off one win.
Yeah, they could have squeezed in a weird upset at some point during the tournament. There definitely would have been a few teams on the bottom half of the totem pole of the tournament in which could have taken that loss and not been necessarily hurt by it. But
remember when David Finlay was in Best of Super Juniors that one year and he got one win? Okay, it was against Gato, but it was one win.
Yeah, it still counts. Another interesting thing too, for me specifically, given that I've seen these guys within the realms of PWG before, seeing Best Friends in this tournament was a nice touch, especially with Chuck Taylor having a few moments here and there throughout that tournament.
Yeah, it seemed like Chuck Taylor kind of doing a bit of a heel turn here.
Chuck Taylor doing Chuck Taylor and PWG things, basically, rather than being Chucky T in ROH, which is...
Yeah, which is interesting, considering they're, as we're talking about this, I think they're supposed to be at the final battle aftermath taping, TV taping session tonight, so who knows how that'll go, but... So in the meantime, so this tournament ran for, several weeks, and not all of it was bad. I mean, I mean, we said last show that we really just didn't give a shit about the World Tag League because, but I mean, there were some worthy things to watch on that show.
I'll give them credit on the fact that they definitely tried a few different things here and there to say, hey, this tournament isn't entirely like a filler arc in an anime before you get to the next big major arc that's been written in the manga like 6 months ago. I'll take the ability of making these references whenever I can get.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, hell, I mean, Kelly and Johnny over on Worldcast intrude with the DC Universe TV shows. on a show about World Class Championship Wrestling. So,
yikes.
Hey Kelly, hey All Johnny, right. hey Kelly, hey Johnny, how are you? Shout out to you guys and Pete. Don't forget Pete, Titans of Wrestling. Pete.
Yeah.
So but, anyway,
with that said, the biggest thing when it comes to this tournament, obviously, we had the finals from last year being repeated. The result being Evil and Sonata winning. But, of course, there is an elephant in the room that we definitely need to talk about here, especially since this is the second time in this calendar year where a tournament of any kind has happened where we've had clear winners, and yet we have a three-way tag match.
Yeah, before we caveat this, it's not just because the Young Bucks that intruded. And Nick, you know what? Again, Nick Jackson blocked me on Twitter, so I don't give a fuck. they can take the criticism. Or actually, I guess they can't because he blocked me. But don't get it twisted. I think it's stupid that they shoehorned Bushi and Shingo into the junior tag match at Wrestle Kingdom because it takes away from Roppongi 3K winning that tournament. And again, Bushi and Shingo, obviously, two of my dudes in New Japan. We nail our colors to the mask, those colors to the mask. But I think it sucks, and they, it takes away winning that Super Junior Tag League. Well, it's the same thing here. But why do you go through these weeks of a tournament to have some guys who haven't been around in months just show up and say, yeah, Bobby, we want in on this shit. Mm-hmm. And if the rumors are true, which is something we failed to discuss last episode, if the rumors are true about this All Elite Wrestling thing happening, it can't happen soon enough. Because I'm tired of it at this point. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Here's my particular take on this, though. And it comes kind of as a two ways. Type perspective. The first one being where at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, we've seen this Evil Sonata versus GOD match before. We've seen that at the end of the tournament, as a matter of fact, to where doing it again at the Dome feels like it would be repetitive. So in a way, a third team being added to the mix does make it at least a little different from what we've already seen throughout this tournament. But on the same vein, tournament related wise, why have the champions be put in that position to where they're in the deciding match of this month-long tag tournament only to have the winners of the tournament beat them in the finals just so to then redo that match again a month later without really there being like a necessary build to the story other than oh, hey, they won a tournament, we're still the champions, even though we made it to the finals of the tournament. It feels redundant, I guess.
And I take that point. I think, honestly, I honestly think it may have been a better match to have Ishii and Yano in the finals against Evil and Sonata.
That was kind of going to be my follow-up point. Why not? Don't put the champions in that precarious of a position when you had four or five teams that were in the mix up to that final day. Make one of those other teams like go through as the second seed, if you will, into that final match, so as a means of preserving the championship match as something that we haven't seen in a few months, rather than that one thing we saw a month prior.
I agree with that, but you know, at the same time, you know, mind you, while this was going on, the real world Tag Determination League was going on in All Japan too.
Yeah,
and they too have a similar situation where the winners of the tag league beat the reigning champions, and now they're going to face them again. And you know, again, people are saying that this is, you know, therefore vastly superior to what New Japan is doing. I'm not going to dispute that point. Just on the basis of All Japan's allowing the tournament winners to have their match without any other extra added bullshit.
That is the one caveat that I will give All Japan on that, but at the same time, it goes back to the same point.
But you know what? It is the same booking. It's the exact same booking, though.
Exactly.
When you think about it, it is the exact same booking. But, I mean, overall, again, the Super Junior Tag League final, okay, that was a three-way. Yeah, I didn't want it to be a three-way. It turned out to be not bad, but I hate three-ways on principle nowadays, and to do it again, I still think takes away the win from Sho and Yo. Doing this completely takes the win away from Evil and Sonata, which, you know what, and if you make the argument of, well, we had to put the Bucks somewhere, you know what, that means you have too big of a roster. And you're just trying to shoehorn people into it.
And
we're going to talk about this a little bit during the Wrestle Kingdom preview part of this, because I'm pissed off about something regarding the booking of Wrestle Kingdom.
Follow up on that as well, really quickly. If you really were desperate to have the Bucks on this particular card, and I get that, I get their attraction. I don't dislike them by any means in terms of the in-ring portion. The out-of-ring portion can be zany and weird, and sometimes wrestlers getting way too much in their own feelings. But then again, it's 2018. I think we all do that sometimes. Point is, if they wanted the Bucks to go through that badly in that match, have them come into the World Tag League and win it as heavyweights.
Right. Like, well, and
you've had them in Super Junior Tag Tournaments before.
Right, but did you see what the Bucks themselves said about this?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, admittedly, this could have just been them snarking, too. I'll get this. But they said that New Japan wasn't giving them enough money to come in for the World Tag League.
Well, I guess that's the reason why the rumors of an All Elite Wrestling, where they're probably going to be showrunners and the like, is going to be a thing, because at the same time, you can only do so much.
Right.
You can only do so much.
Right. But, I mean, again, yeah, they said this. Okay. I guess Final Battle was more important than, you know, being here for these shows, too. You know, just...
I'll say this. To be fair, their contracts are specifically with ROH.
Well, no, I got taken to task by somebody by saying, well, how did you miss that? Meltzer said that they have a joint contract with New Japan. Well, because this is the first I'm fucking hearing about it, for one thing.
Exactly. And then there's the fact that at the end of the day, they do live in the United States. They live in Rancho Cucamonga, California. They probably are going to take more specifically the bookings that will get them home to their families way earlier than the ones that would later. And
right.
Although
at the same time, I'm tired of them acting like they're the only wrestlers that have families too, because, oh well, we wanted to do this. What, you don't think the New Japan guys have families? You know, I know for a fact at least Tanahashi does.
Yeah, but you I know? mean. Most of them definitely have some sort of home life somewhere in there, just
yeah,
because it
doesn't Goto
necessarily
like,
publicized.
Yeah, we've seen Goto post pics of his kids at water parks.
Last I checked, Naito was married and has a kid as well, too. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you know.
It's one of those things, just because it doesn't get publicized, per se, it doesn't mean it's not there. Some people are just very particularly private about certain facets of their life, and
right.
Who can blame them?
Well, again, you know what? The Young Bucks are some of the most thin-skinned, gotten to people in the entire business. But whatever. I mean, the point I was trying to get to is that if you need to ruin the turn, you know, here's the thing about these tournaments, and part of the reason why we say who gives a shit about the World Tag League is because they pull shit like this. Where you have this month-long tournament build up, you know, this month-long tournament, you finally have winners, and Matt just said, and then, you know, two dipshits from Rancho Cucamonga who haven't been around in months can suddenly insert themselves into the match. And it's like, you know what? This is why people are getting on the booking of New Japan Pro Wrestling of late. It's like, they're trying to accommodate a bloated roster, and they don't commit to their gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The problem is that it's not just us out here in the West at this point either. I've been hearing in terms of just looking around through Twitter as a whole that even in Japan, they're just like, what the hell is this? Like, what is going on here? Just, ugh.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And meanwhile, you know, we're hearing about All Japan having, you know, spikes in attendance now. Which is great mm-hmm. for them. Which is great. I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. I'm ecstatic. I think the more that you know, the more companies that do well, the better the wrestling is.
Yeah, and the more competitive of a scene you have in Japan, which you need to make sure that nobody's getting stagnant. Like stagnation is the worst enemy you could possibly have
right.
in the world of pro wrestling.
Well, remember what happened? I mean, and actually, I think we could maybe table this part of this discussion for later. But I just want to say, you know, let's raise the specter of 2016 real quick. You have two of their biggest, possibly biggest ever stars left. And you know, the first reaction was, oh shit, what's New Japan going to do? And then within 2 months, we had the answer. Well, their backs were against the wall, and creatively, they came out of it.
Yeah.
You know? And now we have these other rumors about, you know, the Elite possibly going away to go into business for themselves with, you know, JR and Chris Jericho, which, oh shit, we need to talk about JR too. I don't know. New Japan, it's like this. Cut your roster, commit to your fucking gimmicks. If you had this tournament, and you want it to mean, you know, if you want the people to think it actually means something, make it seem like it means something. You know, you have to create the illusion for the people, you know?
At the end of the day, that's exactly what it comes down to. It's just a matter of making these tournaments where you want a precise, specific winner to fight your champions. Make it exactly that. And don't put your champions in an awkward position where they've wrestled the eventual winners of this tournament, lost to them to where, unless there's a specific story driving it prior to it, unless you establish the narrative outside of the... Because I know sometimes you just need something as simple as, hey, champions, challengers, desire for the belt, but with the way it's booked, sometimes it feels like it's lazy booking rather than it feeling like it's something that they're specifically building up towards. So I guess what we're trying to say is that we just want to see the more consistent effort being put, that if you're going to make a tournament arc happen, basically make it mean something for not only then, but for the eventual future as well.
I mean, we already had, you know, precedence of, you know, Cody Rhodes inserting himself into the IWGP heavyweight title match. Imagine if he
twice.
Did that twice. Well, no, one of them was an actual challenge, so... Yeah, the other one was him inserting himself into a match that everybody wanted, turning it into a match nobody asked for, and lo and behold, it fucking sucked. But I mean, it's like that. I mean, imagine, you know, for Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi coming up, and, you know, some dude, you know, somebody that, you know, got a random pin on Tanahashi during the G1 just suddenly says, well, I beat you, why can't I be in this match, you know? Or, you know,
yeah,
just,
no kidding.
Just for example. You know, mm-hmm. Jay White, you know, imagine if Jay White had inserted himself into the Wrestle Kingdom main event, and we had a three-way, just, as the example of the guy who pinned Tanahashi.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, come the fuck on, guys. You know?
It's dumb precedence, and again, it's specifically, instead of it being built towards something on the long term, it feels like it's being built for, hey, we just need to get these guys on the show and get them a payday, which I can respect trying to get the majority of your roster paydays, but then let's bring them, and we'll get into that during the Wrestle Kingdom preview too, in terms of guys that we're normally used to seeing in these cards that are going to be nowhere near the main card.
Yeah. So we'll save that here for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we'll save that. But long story short, World Tag League, we said last episode who gives a shit, and now they just, you know, gave us ample reasons to further say, well, why should we give a shit, you know? So, yeah, good job, Gato, or whomever is actually booking now, because I don't even know if Gato is actually booking at this point. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like there really hasn't been a coherent booking strategy lately, like there has been in years past, you know? That may just be me. But all that said, so this past weekend, we had the two Road to Tokyo Dome shows, and there were a few interesting things happening here. First of all, just to take this in chronological order, Shingo Takagi had his singles debut in New Japan against Shota Umino. Shota Umino, of course, was in another high-profile singles match earlier this year on a Lionsgate show against a big name of Daisuke Sekimoto. And neither Shota nor Shingo disappointed in this match, I have to say. I pretty well enjoyed it. I don't think it was as good as the Sekimoto match, but it was a good turnout, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Very fun match to watch. Shota continues to improve with each of his performances there. It feels like at some point or another over this next year, he's probably going to be the next guy going on an excursion somewhere if they decide to go that route with him.
Yeah.
And, yep, Shingo showed a lot of the stuff that we've always kind of loved about him as it is through his years at Dragon Gate. So,
amazing how he didn't really have to change much about his shtick. I mean, yeah, they gave him this dragon shtick, which I don't get myself. But, really, he's still being Shingo, and, you know, he has to use Last Falconry instead of, you know, Made in Japan now. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, by the way, where the fuck has Yoshihashi been?
He's
dropped off the face of the earth.
I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Did he get injured or something?
I think so. That one I'm not so sure on. Research.
What does this tell you when it takes us weeks to realize, hey, wait a minute, we haven't seen Yoshihashi. I don't know what that says more for, how well we pay attention or just how...
I wonder if
it has, Yoshihashi is at this
here's
point.
The thing though. I wonder if it has something to do way back during the destruction stuff. If that shoulder injury ended up being worse than what we possibly realized.
Oh shit! You know what? I did forget about that.
That's probably what I'm thinking it is as well.
Yeah. Well, of course, I was also in England for part of that. I wasn't paying total attention then.
There was a time going on. So yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway. That was a fun match. Shota and Shingo, of course, Shingo winning with Last Falconry or whatever they're calling it now, which, whatever, it's Last Falconry, we know the move. And then, you know, we had Kazuchika Okada versus Gato singles match. I was actually amused by the amount of heat that came out of that match.
Yeah.
With mm-hmm. Gato pulling his shtick. That was actually, you know what, that was... actually, some pretty good heel heat building shtick there. I have to applaud that.
Mm. Yeah, I was a fan of it as well, definitely.
I mean, it kind of had that old, you know, like an old, you know, Mid-South or Memphis TV show feel to it, the TV taping feel.
Yeah.
You know, running some sort of injury angle. I can't wrestle tonight because, you know.
The fact that he kept claiming a Chaos fan hit him in a drunk driving incident was priceless.
That was funny. That was absolutely funny. I mean, no, hats off. That was some funny stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, okay, the match itself dragged a little bit, admittedly, but it was a heat builder, and I think they did a good job with it, building that heat.
Yeah, night one of Road to Tokyo Dome in general did a really good job in terms of starting to build heat for a lot of these matches coming up. We've had bits and pieces here and there throughout some of the stuff in Tag League with the multi-man tags and such, but they definitely turned it to a new notch in this particular card. So I thought that was incredibly fun and exciting of them to do. We got Miho Abe dressed as Santa Claus too, which was just a gift in and of itself. Thanks for that, New Japan. I appreciate you.
Not that you're thirsty or nothing, but
don't worry about it.
But well, of course, we didn't get to see on camera, but Taguchi showed up as Santa masked horse.
Yep, that he did.
We didn't get to see that. We unfortunately didn't get to see that on camera, but that would have been cool to see. But one thing, something we kind of glossed over, if we mentioned it at all last episode, but the whole Okada and Tanahashi teaming thing, which has now turned into Chaos and the Sekigun.
Yeah, kind of an odd alliance, like a temporary alliance between the two factions, just on the basis of, hey, the enemy of my enemy at this point with the Bullet Club Cutthroat guys. And of course, the other interesting thing that we should definitely mention here, Togi Makabe coming to Toru Yano's rescue after sketchy history between the two.
Let's we forget. And I wrote about this on the blog, of course, too. Strongstylestory.tumblr.com. For those of you who weren't around at the time, Toru Yano and Togi Makabe used to be a tag team called the Most Violent Players. And of course, following a certain show in April of 2009, Toru Yano, along with the rest of GBH, except for Tamaki Hanma at that point, turned on Makabe to join Nakamura's Rise unit, which then became Chaos.
Yeah, and prior to that, obviously, there had been a war between the Rise faction and GBH, where Rise was starting to lose members left, right, and center there, while Nakamura and Makabe kept locking up. New Japan actually did a really good job with that. They launched one of their recount videos going over the history of Chaos Part 1, which covers a lot of that for people who need the more specific details to see a little bit of footage on it. Definitely go check it out on their YouTube channel.
Yeah, so long story short, Togi Makabe and Toru Yano reunited. Of course, it wasn't completely smooth because Makabe at one point decked Yano on Friday's show.
Yeah, there's still some lingering, like, bad feelings there, but it's more along the lines of where we've kind of been seeing them tell this particular story that Chaos and the regular New Japan Army are both seeing this whole Bullet Club New Alliance thing as a big threat to both sides of the fence, to where, hey, if a temporary alliance needs to happen, then so be it.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's something, and we could look at this. I mean, when you see, like, Okada and Kushida on the same team now.
Yeah,
it's just
astounding.
It makes you wonder if, in fact, maybe we are going to see some of the units split up and reconstitute in other forms now. It's idle speculation, but I mean, they're keeping it going.
It's the right time to do it.
I mean, this never happens where you have. In New Japan, though, specifically, I mean, you never have guys from other units collaborating, And it's just, it makes me wonder if there is going to be a change coming here soon, where that's concerned.
Yeah, we'll wait and see if...
I mean, we've only been begging for it for 2 years.
Yeah, it's just been one of those we've just been, like, holding on for, as you mentioned, year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, yeah, we like both Chaos and Bullet Club should be going away. Bullet Club at least have rejuvenated themselves with, you know, the... with the elite guys going, you know, splitting off from the Bullet Club, although it looks like Chase Owens may be a little confused on that point.
Of course he is.
But
I think you're making gear as expensive, so he's trying to ride that one as much as he can.
That is true, that's too. You know, at the same time, you know, the fact that the elite decided to end their war with the Bullet Club and divest themselves from the Bullet Club on the fucking Jericho boat. It's like, wow, what a great way to end your massive year-long angle.
For our two companies at that. So not only did you waste one company's time, you wasted the other, which is just astoundingly stupid.
Chef's kiss, yeah. Chef's kiss in the lack of self-awareness. Like I said, if this All Elite Wrestling thing has happened, it really can't happen soon enough. I'm tired of this bullshit.
As it's been mentioned already at this point, the Jado Ghetto doing their bullshit heel shtick, which they've been infamous for on their own ends for like the past 20 years. Some people might get tired of it quick. I'm actually kind of all right with it because they've always been assholes, to be completely honest. They were just assholes on the side of guys that you normally tended to like for the longest time.
I think they need to resurrect the "We Are Fuck You, We Are Jado and Ghetto"
shirts.
No,
I definitely would love to see those T-shirts again.
They need to re-up those T-shirts with, you know, how they look now, and you know, put some Bullet Club insignia on there somewhere.
Money, that's easy money right there.
And you know what? I think most Bullet Club merch is trash, but I gotta be honest with you. I low key don't mind Fale's shirt.
Folly shirts have been great.
The IDK, IDC, IDGAF, FM.
I
like that. I'm not gonna get it, but I like it.
Yes, I also do enjoy the if I win, I get paid. If I lose, I get paid. Fuck them.
I gotta be frank. In some ways, they've kind of rejuvenated themselves, and Jay White is over as a fucking heel.
He's starting to figure it out finally. Like we've been seeing him gradually figure things out over the summer with the G1, but man, he's been doing really good work. I actually am really excited to see him at Okada Tango in singles at Wrestle Kingdom and see him kind of redeem himself for the awkward comeback match that he had from Excursion, which. Then again, I think that's more so obviously because we had no idea what the hell this entire Switchblade gimmick was going to be at the time.
I still remember people were thinking it was actually Sammy Callahan. Which, why would you think that?
But that said, definitely Bullet Club is less... The interference stuff can still be annoying to a certain extent, but at the very least... It's not tangled with the elite stuff. Finally, it feels fresh for them to actually go after another faction for once. So,
yeah, and the fact is, you know, we Okada is obviously more concerned with the Jay White sort of things, but it's even carried over the Chaos and Segigun co-production, I guess, whatever. Intermingling since, you know, with the elite too, because of course. You know, you have Ospreay against Ibushi and Tanahashi against Omega. So, I mean, they're still
there's shades of that. They're fighting. It's kind of a war on all different fronts, which is fairly interesting because you also have, when you really think about it, you still have Suzuki-gun guys going up against Chaos guys on top of it too, due to the obvious. Roppongi 3K, Despy, and Kanemaru thing, plus Ishii and Suzuki. You had the whole situation between Goto and Ibushi as well, too, initially. That led into that very last World Tag League show where there was the Never Open Weight Championship match in which Ibushi finally won his first singles title in New Japan.
We kind of forgot about that, actually. We did forget to talk about that. Yeah, Goto dropping the Never belt to Kota Ibushi. Now, we'll talk about this in a little bit. But we'll get into that in the preview. Yeah, I mean, again, that's why I'm thinking we may be seeing a lot of lines getting blurred here and maybe some unit shifting happening here soon, because it's, I just remember, you know, I just had a flashback. I think it was like 2017, I think, or 2017. Yeah, it was 2016, I think. And maybe even into 2017, we were like, yes, this is great. We have clear, you know, unit wars, you know. And now we're like, the lines are blurred. Like, yeah, you know what? Actually, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's an interesting dichotomy because we definitely saw a very linear set throughout 2018 of units going up against each other at specific times of the year. And whenever that shifted, it were the particular unions and stables shifting around to fight other people in set stables. While at the end of this year, as you mentioned, have seen lines getting a little bit crossed, certain tag teams, multi-man tag teams happening, which we wouldn't have thought we'd see at any point in time at the end of last year. So definitely some interesting stuff on that side of the fence, though of course the argument can be made too, is that, hey, we have no idea where the hell this is all heading into 2019 compared to years past, where you could sort of see a little bit of where we were possibly headed.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one. But so anyway, let's get to night two of
absolutely of
the Road to Tokyo Dome. And holy shit, Teriyaki Kanemitsu is back after 25 damn months.
Yeah, seriously.
Of him being out.
And concussion issues, if I remember correctly, with him?
No, it was a cervical spine issue.
Oh, God, even just as bad than in this case.
Yeah. It was not a concussion. He suffered a cervical spinal injury.
Gotcha.
So, but yeah, 25 months, folks. That's how long it can take sometimes to come back in pro wrestling. And He came back today. It was in a tag match
with Ren Narita.
15-minute time limit draw. It was Kanemitsu and Ren Narita against Ayato Yoshida and Shota Umino. Here's the big thing. I think Umino had just been like he was. Kanemitsu was the senior ahead of Umino and Narita, but you know, now that he had his injury, his development got interrupted. His development got massively interrupted. He was looking so good for a good while, and I actually thought he was going to outdo Kawato, but then, of course, Kanemitsu went out. Kawato stepped the fuck up, proved me wrong, and now he's in, well, not doing too well in CMLL, but you know what? We may talk about that next episode of this.
We'll be at that Fantasticomania era,
we'll probably bring back Cubs fan, and we'll definitely discuss Kawato at that point. But in any event, so yeah, you could see that, you know, where Narita and Shota have, you know, broken out and that they've improved. I mean, Kanemitsu, it's not fair to judge him just yet. He just came back, but
literally,
I really just hope he's able to get back to at least where he was when he got injured, because then maybe he can surpass that. But I mean, it's like, but sometimes I just wonder how they judge development, because I thought Oka had just stalled out. I thought he was going to fail. And then suddenly they sent him off to RevPro.
And he's been doing fairly well over there.
He's doing
too,
very well as Dominator Great Okarn. I mean, it's a comedy gimmick, but you know, still.
But then again, at the same time, when you consider Oka's personality and his like big love for anime too, maybe a zany enough character was just what he needed to kind of help him break out in terms of everything else. Sometimes for some wrestlers, it seems like you just need one extra thing kind of added or even removed, and suddenly everything else clicks. It's weird to say.
Yeah, it is weird. It is kind of weird. So we got that. Yeah, so it was great to see Kanemitsu come back. What else happened earlier today? Of note.
There was a certain press conference. Let's get into that.
Oh yeah, there was a couple of hours prior to the show. Yeah, I did watch that, and it was
hilarious.
I mean, it was hilarious. It was hilarious because Naito fucking owned Jericho. Jericho just kept repeating the same damn thing over and over. And I do
think that was on purpose to a certain extent too, because
it didn't. He didn't sound very good though. Honestly, but that press conference, and of course it, you know, devolved into a shoving match, you know,
not so much a shoving match as it was Jericho trying to get at Naito responding back with a punch or two every so often, but still remaining the same exact spot, while Young Lions dragged Jericho backwards while Naito just kept
tranquilo.
Jericho-san.
that press conference was fun to watch. I mean, it came at a good time because Jericho was getting repetitive, so, you know.
Yeah, and not just that. I will say this in terms of the Jericho situation. Actually, no, I'll hold back on that until we get to the preview of the IC title match. Let's hold off on that.
Night two. But back to this. So, you know, in the relevant match, there was, you know, the six-man, Naito, Bushi, and Shingo against Taichi, Kanemaru, and Desperado. Shingo Takagi had a three-alarm lucha bloodbath happen on him.
And it was weird, too, because it definitely was in just one of the spots on the outside. He suddenly was just busted open on the left side of his head.
Yes.
And then they just open up that wound accordingly on the
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of wild. Shout out to Peter Winson of Greetings of Allentown, by the way, who came up with the five-alarm lucha blade job scale. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, if we want to do the traditional Muda scale, it was probably only like about a, you know, 0.65 on the Muda scale. But,
yeah, that sounds,
you know,
about right.
But the fight, it looked like it was hard way, though, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then, you know, we had another, you know, mixed Chaos Segigun tag match against, you know, Jay White's Bullet Club. And then, the Golden Lovers beating another mixed tag of Tanahashi and Ospreay. And, you know, they held hands in the snow to see out the New Japan year.
Yeah, a little bit of Christmas caroling. Ibushi basically saying a few stoic, nice words, in which everybody was very fired up about at the end of the show as well, too. People really, really love Ibushi, which is... It's a fair assessment to make, I think, no matter where you are in terms
of
the world.
Yeah, no, he's great. No, Ibushi's great, and I think it's going to be a great match, which we'll, you know, we'll talk about that at the break, but, you know, well, not at the break, I mean at the... Yeah, when we talk about the Wrestle Kingdom,
yeah.
I will say this though. That was it. The snow fell in Korakuen, so that's it. New Japan is done for 2018. So I do want to bring up two other news bits. We're gonna do the live read, and then we'll do our Wrestle Kingdom preview. So, the news bits I want to bring up. Chris, did you see the announcement of the New Beginning USA?
Yes, I did. Two shows, one at the Globe Theater, which has been PWG's recent home over the past couple of months.
Yes.
And then one in Charlotte, North Carolina.
North Carolina. They are moving away from the West Coast. They are moving out of California now.
That is a very interesting choice of a place. But Charlotte has always been a very
wrestling town.
They'll do fine there, I think.
Now, here's what I find interesting is that the LA show is on a Wednesday.
Yes.
So I don't know how that's going to affect things as far as attending. But, and the Globe Theater is kind of a smaller place. But they also mentioned that the New Beginning USA, they said wrestlers who are not part of the Japan matches will be going to the U.S. matches.
Yes.
Chris, what are the odds Michael Elgin will show up at the New Beginning USA?
I'd still say slim to none, given that he has not been in a majority of these USA shows since the very first G1 special.
Yeah, well, the US same, title tournament. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty well aware of how toxic he is right now. I don't think
they need these particular problems. Plus, if you really think about it, at this point, whatever 2-year deal he signed with them, that's probably running out fairly soon.
Well, I think we talked about that last week, last episode. I don't know. It depends on when he signed it. I don't remember when he signed it.
Yeah. For some reason, I was thinking it had been in 2017, actually. Just a little bit before all the rumors broke out. But
well, if that's the case, then he's going to be around for at least through 2019, then.
But still, they have been, for the most part, outside of the World Tag League stuff that just happened this past month. And
well, he's barely been around since G1. Well, anyway, okay, let's move on. Okay, so the North Carolina show will be on Friday, February the 1st. So, that's going to be interesting. Yeah. So they have the two New Beginning USA shows. And then lastly, before we get into the Wrestle Kingdom preview, Chris, did you know about the changes in New Japan on Access?
With it being JR and Barnett's last show together?
I heard about it, yes. Jim Ross and Jim Barnett Jim Ross and Josh Barnett are no longer on New Japan on Access. This news broke after we recorded our last show, so we haven't had a chance to talk about this.
No, we definitely have not, but I think for some reason I felt this was coming at a certain point after a certain specific set of actions during the summer.
But yeah, you know, I'm fairly certain that, yeah, him shooting on Jay White, I'm fairly certain that him shooting on Jay White had a lot to do with this change of the guard, because I think that was about the point when they started making, you know, they started taking the complaints about JR and Barnett. Now, the complaints about JR's end, of course, is that on the live shows, he was just getting lost and couldn't remember wrestlers' names, didn't seem to pay attention to what was actually going on with, you know, storylines or things like that. I will still say, in his credit, that first of all, Jim Ross has also had a very rough couple of years in his personal life. You know, not the least of which his wife being killed in a wreck, you know? So I'm willing to give him some slack there. On the taped episodes for New Japan on Access, I didn't think it was that bad because, you know, if he flubs anything, they could edit it, you know? But he didn't have that luxury on a live show, and he just kept flubbing his lines and getting lost.
You know, and normally I'd be all there with you on that in terms of, hey, maybe just keep him to recorded stuff only. But then I remember a specific match at an NXT TakeOver show between Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, in which he was on commentary for, in which he, for the most part, actually nailed it. So well, I'm a little bit...
I think it's pretty clear that he really was not paying it. I mean, he was really not paying as much attention as he maybe should have been.
Yeah, and that is an issue for me at this point that should have been corrected a long time ago. And here's the thing. It's okay if you're not interested in New Japan. There is plenty of pro wrestling out there that you can get yourself lost into and the like. But when you're mailing it in for checks, that's when it becomes a little bit annoying, especially when you're trying to expand the product westward during a time in which you don't even specifically have you have very good crowds coming in now for a lot of these shows in Japan. But let's face it, New Japan hasn't sold out the Dome as of yet. We're hoping this happens at some point over this next year or two with the Wrestle Kingdom shows coming up on weekend dates and the like, but that's still going to be a big test for them on the local side of the market. Plus, you'd think at this point maybe they would try another Dome show somewhere during the course of the year on a weekend. I mean, they did Budokan this year, which is a very good step forward towards that, but...
They traditionally never did well in Budokan. Budokan was always All Japan's house.
Yeah, literally.
Rhea Goku was, you know, New Japan's house, and now they did very well there. But yeah, I mean, long story short, I think it was a mixture of, you know, the mounting criticism against JR, because even New Japan talents were criticizing JR.
Oh yeah,
on it. But I mean, I think what was the beginning of the end of this was the shoot incident by Barnett against Jay White.
Yeah, because at that point, Axis had no other choice but to actually pay attention to it, because we started seeing Kevin Kelly come into the fold, them doing, like, pre-recorded...
Right, and Barnett was... He had a conflict with one of his fighters, and bullshit. Yeah, the conflict was with Jay White and Bushiroad was the conflict. Come on, guys. You know? We know. We've been know. You know? So, yeah, I mean, it was obvious that, you know, after that incident, it was obvious. I mean, I thought it was obvious that Barnett wasn't going to be around much longer. I'm kind of surprised that they got rid of JR, too. But I think, you know, since JR is also rumored to be one of the partners in this All Elite Wrestling thing, yeah, maybe not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It may not be such a surprise, but... You know, again, I mean, I want to thank JR and Barnett for keeping the show going after Mauro Ranallo left. Because remember, he was the first host of NJPW on Access.
And him and Barnett worked really well as a team. He brought the best out of Barnett during a lot of those commentaries.
And I also think, I mean, and you know, once JR came in, you saw a lot of. You know, Barnett's, you know, other tendencies to make, like, you know, off-color jokes or just start rambling about, you know, random tangents that really had nothing to do with the match. And I think Ranallo did a much better job than JR did of reeling him in on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at times Barnett was, you know, more knowledgeable than JR of New Japan.
Yep.
And, yeah, so... But I mean, here we are. It's you know, it is what it is, and you know, now you know we have a new era, and now we're just gonna I think Axis is basically just going to be playing, you know, chopped up versions of the English feed now with Kevin Kelly and Don Callis,
which is fine because it kind of they can use that English feed for sure, especially now that they're integrating Chris Charlton a little bit more into the commentary side of the fence as well. Him and Kevin Kelly did a really good job in these past two Road to Tokyo Dome shows as well, with that having Chris do the translation on a lot of the post-match promos and the like has been really good as well, to have him the live feeds rather than having the
they'll make that superfluous. He'll be superfluous though on the TV feeds, because you know, on the Access feeds, because they translate him.
Yeah, I figured they'll probably edit the audio on some of that, just to chop things up a little bit. So, I mean, the Access guys will still get their works done into that. But, hey, at the very least for the commentary side of things, it feels like it would be cheaper to just do it out of cutting clips from the English version of live commentary rather than having to pay JR and Barnett to come in the studio and record those lines.
Oh yeah, this would definitely be a cost-cutting measure, and it would be a shame to cut Chris Charlton out of the commentary, but then again, you know, you had to explain who Chris Charlton is too, so to a TV audience. I mean, we know who he is because we're in, you know, the bubble, as they say. But yeah. So anyway, so that's the end of JR and Barnett, and you know, again, I'm not gonna say I'm gonna miss them on commentary, but you know, thanks for sticking around and doing this for years. I mean, yeah, it really helped break New Japan in America. It was definitely certainly a part of it. So I mean, they deserve credit for their part in helping with that. Even though there's a lot to criticize about it, so yeah, so that's it. So hey, we have this ad copy to read, and then we'll get into our Wrestle Kingdom 13 preview.
Let's do it.
Check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at the PWO forums. We've been online for over a decade and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own, whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep discussion in the Microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present. Check all this out and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. I have to work on my radio voice for that.
No worries.
Check all this out at www.prowrestlingonly.com. You know, or something like that. Nailed it. You know. But, well, hey, you know what? They were cool to keep us around after the whole Place to Be Nation split, so, you know.
True. You know, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a spot here.
Thanks for not firing us, I guess is the better way of putting it.
Well, it was coming. Remember when we tried to get fired? Jokingly. And then it turns out, yeah, we kind of did anyway, but, you know, not for that
shout
reason.
Shout out to Lawrence O'Brien. Check out the Prospect Podcast when you have a chance.
Yeah, please do that. And also, shout out to Chad Campbell and Brad from Place to Be Nation, too.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to them. Thanks, guys. So we have our Wrestle Kingdom 13 preview, which, of course, shock of all shocks, happens on January the 4th, 2019. It's a Friday this year. I will not be taking off work for this, though. Unlike last year. No, this card is not strong enough for me to take the day off of work. I'm sorry. I'll just watch it when I get home and I can, you know, get drunk and whatnot. If you want to watch this, there's at least 3 ways you can do it. You can subscribe to NJPW World, of course. It will be on live. You can buy the one show purchase on Fight TV for $35. Why the fuck you would do that is beyond me. But it is what it is. And then later, if you want to watch a chopped up, tape delayed version that will be spread out over 2 or 3 airings, Access TV will be showing it. On tape delay, because it's actually going to be same day. We're now to the point of same day broadcasts, Chris, of Wrestle Kingdom, because it's on a Friday. Now I looked at the schedule. Speaking of which, it looks like they are going to be blowing off Fantastica Mania once more on New Japan on Access, which I think is a grave error, but you know,
worst. But hey, at this point,
yeah. What can you do? But anyway. So we're just gonna go down our card here. So before we go much further, I'm gonna bring up a couple of points here that I brought up on the blog too.
I'm in agreement with you on those points, by the way. Trust me.
Both the points? Okay. One of the points being there's a lot of criticism of the fact that 7 out of the 9 main show matches feature Gaijin, and mostly elite Gaijin. The fact of the matter is that the January 4th Tokyo Dome show has always had a lot of Gaijin presence in it. And in fact, the very first January 4th Tokyo Dome show was the second New Japan versus WCW show, which, by the way, we covered way back when in episode 2 of Strong Style History. So go back under the Pro Wrestling Only feed archives. It's there. It happened, and there were a couple of matches that were Gaijin versus Gaijin matches. I will make you aware, up to and including the main event, which was, by the way, the Steiner Brothers versus Sting and Great Muta.
Yep.
So I mean, I think that's a non. I mean, I understand we all hate the elite now, but let's call it for what it is. This has always happened. You know,
it's not uncommon. Let's put it that way. Like as much as you might think certain hatred out to that particular faction is justified or stuff that isn't justified, depending on how you look at it. At the same time, Wrestle Kingdom has always been a showcase of really a lot of talent that New Japan has, which includes their foreign portion of the roster. It just so happens this particular year around, you got a couple of other foreign faces to go along with the obvious elite guys as well. And unfortunately, the really shitty thing about this is that we have two very notable names from last year's show, arguably the best match of last year's show, that are in the main card completely.
Yeah, this was my second bitch point, which was, I think you, me, I think Lawrence was in agreement too, way back when, that we all felt the best match at Wrestle Kingdom 12 was Minoru Suzuki versus Hirooki Goto. And this year, and this is Suzuki's, 50th year on planet Earth, his 30th in pro wrestling. Goto hasn't had a stellar year, but he's had a decent year. I haven't hated very many of his matches. And neither of them are on the main card of Wrestle Kingdom. And that is complete horseshit, if you ask me. Especially, I think Suzuki had many, many good matches this year, and I think was worthy of a spot on this card.
I think the most disappointing thing for me in terms of Minoru is that, as much as I love Naito, Naito did not need to beat Minoru Suzuki for the Intercontinental Championship earlier this year, especially given the run that Minoru was in with that title on hand.
The run
would have gotten stale or not, we don't know.
Naito's story, and let's face it, I think Suzuki with that belt was more to do with a buildup of how low Tanahashi had gotten by that point. It was less to do with Suzuki and more to do with Tanahashi, I think. But, at the same time, Suzuki, we'll talk about this in side B. Long story short, Suzuki definitely earned a spot on the main card. And I think Goto kind of did too. Now, that being said,
the argument can be made on Goto, but yeah.
Now, that being said, the dark match this year is a never open weight 6-man comedy title contenders match instead of the New Japan Rumble. So, they better find a way to get Cheeseburger on this goddamn match.
Seriously. I want to see the wackiest 6-man trios combinations you can possibly get in this gauntlet.
Long story short, I better see the winner of this open weight 6-man comedy better be Scott Norton, Cheeseburger, and Masahiro Kakihara.
Yes. The wackiest teams. Please,
let's just get full fucking
weird
war 6-man street fight level weird, trios in here,
Look, it's one of those things, I'm sure there'll be a Suzuki Gun team at this point with Iizuka, Suzuki, and then probably Lord Taichi in this case, or some shit. There's obviously, you could do, I guess, Goto, Yano, and Yoshihashi if he's healthy enough for a Chaos side.
Yeah, maybe. Killer Elite Squad needs something to do, too.
Yeah, KES and Suzuki probably would be a good bet in that situation.
We can pretty much figure... I mean, for one, it looks like the Ingobernables will not be in this match. Thank you, sweet baby Jesus, for that one.
Ooh, she's on the main card for the first time in 3 years.
Yes!
Jesus fucking Christ. Finally happening.
It's happening. And he's not in the opening match, either. That's... the wildest thing. He's not in the opening match. We're just gonna get some wild, some wild, wacky six trios in this.
We have always been very critical of the booking of the never open weight 6-man tag team titles.
They're comedy titles, come on.
I was about to say there is reason for that. However, in a match of that circumstance, if that's how you're gonna open the pre-show portion, just get wild with it. Get all the possible combinations that you can get for trios make it as interesting as the Rambo has been over the past couple of years when opening up the pre-show portion. Just don't be afraid of really getting wild with it if you really have to.
Yeah, I mean, they could make this as classic as the Rumble if they really want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, if so, they want to.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed on that.
So
they'll have time to do that.
They will. I mean, they'll have an hour to do it. So, you know, mm-hmm. they got an hour to in between. Okay, so the first match proper on the show, they're opening with the Never Open Weight Championship of Kota Ibushi versus Will Ospreay. Now, in fairness, I know, yeah, Goto just lost the belt and, you know, maybe kind of got hosed. In fairness, I think that they were pushing for this match to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think it was supposed to be, I think it was supposed to be Ospreay defending against Ibushi.
Yeah,
but with Ospreay having that rib injury, I think they had to just get to the match a different way.
It shuffled a few things around, definitely, but I definitely had the feeling that they were building Ospreay to eventually be the one who beat Goto in the first place, which would have been really interesting given Chaos Buddies and all, but...
Well, no, I think... No, remember, Ospreay was supposed to face Taichi at,
Power Struggle,
and then he had that injury, so...
That's
yeah.
My bad. No, you're correct on that. It would have been Ospreay versus Taichi for the title to begin with, so... For me... Even though Will Ospreay is really a shitty human being, this should be a fantastic match from the wrestling side of the fence to open up the show.
Will Ospreay can professionally wrestle real well. He is just a complete amoral dipshit, unfortunately.
Pretty much.
You know?
Yep.
So there's
but then
that.
Again, pro wrestling has plenty of those, so unfortunately it's not as uncommon as you would think.
Exactly. Yeah, no, not by any stretch. But yeah, I think we've had plenty of hand wringing on this very program. Is like, why the fuck do we still watch this when it seems like, you know, anywhere from half to three quarters of the people in it are complete scumbags, you know? You know, why do we keep up with it? So I think, you know what, I think a lot of the time the reason why we keep up with it as far as New Japan goes is because they're in Japan, therefore we don't know half of what goes on outside, you know, who knows. Okay, so second match on the main card will be the three-way match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship that we already kind of buried because we think it's complete bullshit that Shonyo's victory got, you know, immediately crapped on. Even though it got Bushi and Shingo on the main card, so I don't know. You know what? Here's what they should have done. They should have taken the belts off of Kanemaru and El Desperado ages ago, and that way we could have just had Roppongi 3K versus Bushi and Shingo.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what really should have happened.
I like Despy as much as the next guy, but I think we're all really sick and tired of them holding the junior heavyweight titles.
Yeah.
So we're just like, someone with this.
And plus, Kanemaru can just fuck off. He has shown like a couple of glimpses of, oh, yeah, you know what, maybe he is still, you know, pretty decent. But no, he's not.
No, he
can fuck off. Do you want to place any bets on these matches? So who win? I think Ibushi retains against Ospreay.
I do think Ibushi retains as well. I think he's sticking around just doing freelance Ibushi things, which is completely fine because freelance Ibushi things are usually very good things.
So who wins the junior three-way?
I'm going to say, honestly, it's Roppongi 3K. They get back to the throne that they've... should have been on back on quite some time ago, but it kind of just follows up again. Two-time Super Junior Tag League winners get their title reign back again. Things are in motion for them to be the top dogs of that division for a little while longer.
Still have a feeling that they're going to get Bushi and Shingo because you don't bring in Shingo Takagi just to... fill space.
That's fair. I think either result is one that I wouldn't complain about. I just don't want Kanemaru and Despy winning. Like, please, for the love of God.
Yeah.
Don't.
The next one is very interesting, and this will be even better than, you know, usually last few years they've had, like, Ring of Honor world title matches. Last year, they dropped the Ring of Honor portion of it because Cody Rhodes had lost it to Dalton Castle, so then Cody Rhodes versus Kota Ibushi became the U.S. versus Japan handsome battle, which made the match about 100 times more interesting.
Oh, easily.
Than it was if it was the Ring of Honor World Title match. This time, we have an outside belt being defended. It's the RevPro Undisputed British Heavyweight Championship, and it's Tomohiro Ishii versus Zack Sabre Jr.
Yep, Zack Sabre Jr. chasing after the title, in which he has held in the past, if I recall correctly. And
he totally has, yes.
Yeah, he definitely has called it.
Well, and yeah, then, he feuded with Shibata over it.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the fact that Ishii did win that belt off of Minoru Suzuki earlier this summer, late in June. So
actually, no, they've swapped the belt back and forth now.
Gotcha,
because
but I mean,
Ishii won it back. He recently won it back from Suzuki, and then he fought Suzuki. He defended it against Suzuki at Power Struggle.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Which was a great match, probably the best one on the show, honestly.
Yeah,
and then so now we have Ishii and Sabre. I'm not a huge Sabre fan. I could see this though as the way for Sabre to actually take the belt back to RevPro, though.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best direction that they can take it into, just as a way of continuing to elevate Zack Sabre Jr. as a threat to anybody within that heavyweight division, even though he looks nothing like a heavyweight from an aesthetic perspective. People can argue that to the moon all they want, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, I just think that they're going to have Sabre win it just so he can take it back to York Hall.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it is as well. So that
and then he'll drop it to somebody else on the RevPro roster.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a really good highlight for a belt that has seen its fair share of really good champions over the course of the years, and keeping that RevPro New Japan relationship fairly strong. It's been one of their better partnerships in terms of expansion. So
I definitely agree with that one. I think we both agree Sabre's gonna probably win this match.
Now,
if Ishii wins, I'll be very happy because I'm not a fan of Sabre, but I think Ishii's pretty over in RevPro too. So, I mean, mm-hmm. He's pretty popular in England, so who knows?
I don't think there's a wrong result here by any means.
It's just
a matter of what they want to do with it.
Yeah, no, they're
which
they're
is the
really
way it should be in wrestling, to be honest with you. You should have a way in which you have certain fans be happy if a certain guy wins, but then also understand that if it goes the other way, hey, there's a story being told here for some reason, and we can look forward to that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I definitely agree with that one. I think that they're doing really well with that. The match following, the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team 3-way match that we already completely thoroughly buried in this, all I'm going to say is I really hope Evil and Sonata win. And I think what's going to happen is maybe the only reasonable explanation is Evil and Sonata will beat the Bucks, so therefore the Gorillas of Destiny don't actually get pinned, and Evil and Sonata can win, and then you know the masses can fuck off out of New Japan.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that, to be honest, because it gets the belts back on Evil and Sonata. It still keeps GOD within that relevance portion for the eventual New Beginning tours, and to do that singles match finally there. So, and even if GOD retains, that's fine with me too. I just, again, for the love of God, if the Bucks are leaving, don't put the fucking belts on them as like a last minute thing. Like, I know what you're thinking, New Japan. I know.
Yeah, right?
No.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Please.
And, on a similar note, the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship, the belt specifically created for Kenny Omega.
I hope Juice kills him.
I do, too. Yeah, I'm definitely Team Juice on this, man. Cody Rhodes defending against Juice Robinson, the guy he beat for it. Yeah, Juice Robinson, I think the booking has done him wrong.
Juice Robinson should be defending this title right now and, like, defend 6 or 7 of this damn belt, considering what happened during G1.
Yeah, he really should be. And furthermore, I think that the booking in the second half, which is something that we're going to talk about on Side B, I think.
But yeah, Side B is a good time to cover that, I'd say. We'll have the time to do it.
But specifically, Juice Robinson got completely hosed in this booking. because they, I mean, after the match in San Francisco, you know, the match where the shoot happened, which is what, you know, what we all remember of that match is the shoot happening. But the fact of the matter is, prior to that happening, Jay and Juice were having like a four-alarm Memphis-style brawl beforehand, and Juice Robinson looked like an absolute fucking star at the end of that match.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, the booking has just done him so wrong. I mean, he kind of redeemed himself towards the end during G1, but ever since then, they just made him look like a schmuck.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they were setting him up really well during the G1, I felt, with the initial losing streak due to the broken hand and not being able to use, like, a major aspect of his offense as it was built throughout commentary, toward the end of the tournament where he started, that hand started feeling a little bit better and he started taking a few more risks with it, resulting in some fairly big wins, to where you're like, okay, so the story is set in place that all of these guys that beat him are going to line up to try and take the title off of him, and he's going to have maybe a chance to redeem himself there. Maybe he loses it halfway through these defenses and then has to get it back from the person he lost to. The story potential was there. They just decided to squander it because Cody decided to play the, my daddy liked you more than he liked me before he died angle, which...
Yeah, done. You know, it was, and you know, honestly, Juice Robinson, if they had done it properly, he could have been like the closest thing to like a territorial babyface that New Japan has seen in a while. Like, you know, like, you know, you could see a Juice Robinson type, not exactly him, not exactly his character. You know, the way that they were kind of building him up, he could have been like an analogous to, like, you know, I don't know, a Junkyard Dog in Mid-South or Kerry Von Erich down in World Class, you know, just, you know, he's the regional hero.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, and they could have had that sort of aura about him with the US title, but no, they didn't, and they put it on Cody Rhodes, and then he inserted him. Anyway, you know what? Fuck Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, just we're done with him at this point.
Yeah,
it's just...
again, if this All Elite Wrestling thing is happening, it can't come a moment too soon, because we're all, a lot of us are pretty sick of him. So
yeah, also as a quick thing, in 2019, Juice, I know you probably like him, but the white boy dreads have just got to go, dude. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, it's 2019, man. It's not a good look. You know,
like, you'll be fine with just your regular hair. Trust us, it'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I tend to agree. But
let's move on, though.
So moving on,
this match is one I'm really excited about.
Oh,
to be honest,
yes,
with you.
The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Kushida defending against Taiji Ishimori. You know that this was supposed to be Hiromu.
Yeah,
we all know this was supposed to be Hiromu because this would have been a rematch from the BOSJ final.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, for a replacement match due to Hiromu being injured, hell of a replacement. Kushida, I don't think I can say this enough times, that I think Kushida is the most consistent guy that New Japan has had over the past 2 to 3 years.
You have said that a few times.
I have, but I want to emphasize it again, just in how performance-wise, the things that he does... I still don't get why on earth he had to job the likes of Kenny King and Ring of Honor to lose the TV title of theirs over there, but that's a completely different rant for a different time.
That's Sinclair. That's delirious booking for you. So,
but regardless, should be a really good match, and yeah. You have a babyface that's facing odds because throughout this World Tag League tour, Taiji Ishimori has had his number. Time and time and time again.
Yes, he has. Here's the thing, though. You've heard the rumors. I guess
Wait.
We haven't heard the rumors.
No, I haven't.
I guess WWE's fishing, you know, casting a line for an offer on Kushida.
Not as surprising as expected.
I don't know. You know what? We may be splitting on this one. I think Ishimori's going to win. Honestly,
I wouldn't be surprised if Ishimori did. To be honest, just to keep that because his run as the new Bone Soldier has been phenomenal thus far.
Well, hell yeah.
And I feel he would make a really great foil for some of these guys in the junior division to kind of rule the division for, like, at least the first half of 2019.
Yeah, I think so. I think Ishimori's going to win this. I think I still think it'll be a really good match, but yeah, I think Ishimori's going to win this. I think this is. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a title. I think we're going to see another title change here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm in agreement with you on that.
And following that, the only non-title match on the card, Kazuchika Okada versus Jay White.
Special singles match.
Special singles match. Oh, damn, I forgot to put the units on for people on the blog. Oops.
No worries.
Yeah, I think we all know.
They probably know.
Yeah.
They probably know.
Yeah, I think this is... I think Okada's going to win this one because White's just been, you know... Jay White's been antagonizing him ever since G1. I think this is where Okada finally gets his.
Yeah, I think it'll be a nice little redemption moment for Okada there from the G1 stuff and finally him regaining some of that Rainmaker groove rather than Balloon Boy Okada Best Boy groove.
Well, which... when they announced, you know, when they had the press conference for this match, I mean, Okada, Rainmaker Okada came back.
Yeah,
he kind of came back during that press conference. I was I was pretty cheesed about that. That was pretty good. Yeah, but yeah, I think Okada wins this too.
It's going to be a very good match though between them. I think Jay is finally going to show a lot of people who saw Wrestle Kingdom last year and would kind of just why did you do that exactly? I think there will be a lot of eyes turned around if they haven't turned around on them throughout this year as of yet.
But do you realize that this is the first time since Wrestle Kingdom 6 that Kazuchika Okada has not been in a match for the IWGP heavyweight title?
It's nuts, isn't it?
We'll discuss some of this on Side B, but following that, IWGP Intercontinental Championship, of course, Chris Jericho versus Tetsuya Naito. I think
the rightful co-main event.
Thank you. Thank you. I was going to call such massive, massive bullshit if they did not list this as a co-main event like they did last year for Omega.
Yeah.
I was going to call such bullshit, but here we are. So they did the right thing. I think Naito's going to win because he's going to have – this is the beginning of his redemption story, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're gonna have two opposite and eventually clashing redemption stories happening in 2019. That's my big prediction. It's gonna be Okada and Naito.
Yeah.
And eventually it's gonna culminate in main eventing Wrestle Kingdom 14 on the Saturday, which is the one that Kidani always said he wanted to sell out because it was on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's the one that I think even New Japan fans have kind of marked on the calendar. I think just because we know Saturday night, Tokyo Dome, everybody's out at work.
That may be the night that they finally legit fill the Tokyo Dome for the first time in decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I think Naito wins this one.
Same.
And because again, Jericho's also been, you know, linked to this All Elite Wrestling shtick. So
I will say this is just a quick addendum. Even though he hasn't worked a lot of dates just due to contract situations, him touring, whatever it was in between, I'll say this: at the very least, when Jericho has shown up, he has put in some work. He had a really good match against Evil earlier this year for the defense of the title, and the times that he's shown up over the past couple of days to promote this particular match, him and Naito have done some really good work together to build that up. So I'm fairly excited to see the brawl that they're going to put on.
And let's face it, this match has been building since New Year Dash.
Yeah, it has been a 364-day build for it.
It really has been. Now, it's not been consistently over those 364
True.
Days.
And that's something we can discuss in Side B, by the way.
That's another Side B. Finally, the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, the main event. Oh, boy. Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. Honestly, you know, I'm still not excited about this match. I really am not. So far, Omega's reign has not been inspiring at all, and
is why I want it to end right there and then. Fuck it. Let Tanahashi air guitar us out of the Tokyo Dome one more time.
Tanahashi was the last guy to actually win the title in a Wrestle Kingdom. I think he's the only guy. Mm-hmm. I think it was Wrestle Kingdom 3, actually, I think. If I recall correctly, he beat Keiji Muto.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, that was, because otherwise it's been retention, basically.
Which, even though I'm a, huge Keiji Muto mark, that really wasn't a great match. But I think that, I don't know, shout out to our man Dion, he also thinks that Tanahashi's going to win. It sounds like you think Tanahashi's going to win.
I would like to see Tanahashi win. I don't necessarily think it happens, though. Because it's one of those situations like my heart wants Tana, but my head is still thinking, yeah, they're going to stick with this Kenny Omega nonsense at least for a couple more shows before he either finally gets linked with the whole All Elite thing and probably drops the title so he doesn't have to lose it like a little bitch, or he ends up losing it somewhere New Year's Dash, or somewhere within the road to New Beginning or New Beginning itself, whatever.
We got so burned last year with thinking that, oh, this was it. This is going to be Naito's moment, finally, at long last, and we got burned so hard on that. I mean, I seem to get over it quicker than most people did.
Yeah, no, I was over it fairly quickly when considering the just everything that was coming to happen in the aftermath of that with Okada's legendary run, to where it's like, you know what, this at least soothes it a little bit, because at least they had a purpose with that story rather than just then having Okada randomly lose it at a show that's not as big kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they had a purpose, which, again, this is something we're going to discuss on Side B, too. But, mm-hmm. I don't know. I would prefer, with this in mind, I would prefer Tanahashi, because Omega's reign has just absolutely sucked as champion. And in fact, the only really good match that Omega has had has either been, had both been non-title. It was actually, three of them. It was his matches against Naito in G1, his match against Kota Ibushi in G1, and his match against Penta at All In.
I'm going to say him and Ishii at G1 was also a banger, too.
Oh, okay, you're right. I forgot about that. I did neglect that. But even then, the match against Ishii for the title was just... They just went through the greatest hits, and
I think the better, because we ranted in like accordance about it when it did eventually.
I'm saying is, I mean, like, you know, if I go see a band I've always been into, like Pet Shop Boys, I went and saw Pet Shop Boys in November 2016, right?
Yeah.
And I was so happy that they played West End Girls so early in the show, so that we got it out of the fucking way. And then they played like a lot of their newer material, which I actually really liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, okay, you know, they're still around, they're still active. And it was like that. Omega and Ishii just went through the greatest hits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then called it a night. But I mean, the matches Omega has had for this title so far have just been anywhere from just meh to god awful.
Yeah, and it's the
For someone touting himself the best bout machine, he really hasn't fucking earned it since winning the title. Again, his best matches have not been for the title. Naito, Ishii, and Ibushi in G1, and then I'm going to say his best match since winning the title was the match against Penta, but I think a lot of that was because Penta is also a superior wrestler, in my opinion. That's just, again, my opinion. I think Penta's a far superior wrestler than Kenny Omega. Come at me, folks, because I don't give a shit.
it's one of those things where booking was poor around the title, and then the matches being uninspiring, as well as just the double whammy of really bad circumstances, and then when you have the fact that the criticism is happening on Twitter and that Kenny's doubling down on the nonsense that he did throughout the year.
Yeah, well, again, that's going to be a side B topic, so...
Yeah, all right, we'll get into that then.
But long story short, I think Kenny Omega is actually going to retain, because that's just what history has told me, and I got so burned last year, I'm just not going to set myself up for heartbreak again. I think Omega is going to win it, so... Fair, he's going to retain, and the malaise will continue.
I'll be the contrarian then, just to have my feelings wrecked with. I think Tanahashi will win it.
You're going to be all in your feels about this, Chris? Is that how this is going to be?
I mean, it won't be as bad as last year, let's put it that way.
Yeah, good point.
Going on a drinking binge with chips and salsa and tequila at like 6 in the morning at an airport in Kansas City while waiting to get to D.C.
Oh, shit, I forgot you were traveling that day. I just, yep. You know, I swear, if you remember, do you remember the blog post? When I wrote the blog after that, I just said I'm going to bed. Did because I stayed up all night.
Oh no! Here's the worst part of it, because I don't think I may have described that particular story at the time. Is that I was already at the airport and I was watching the show there when I had to go into my flight. That was just when Tana had pinned Jay to retain the title, so the main event was starting just as I had the board, so it's like, well, I guess I'll watch this eventually the moment I land in Kansas City. I do. I watch that main event, and I'm just like, the bar's open. Perfect.
Wow. Because
it was like a 2.5 hour like hang time that I had until taking
the
flight.
It's 6 in the morning in Kansas City. I'm going to get loaded.
Yep. It's like, this is how I'm going to decompress. That first weekend was off to a stellar start, to say the least.
Oh my god. Why did you hang on to this story for so long?
I don't know. I just don't think the opportunity ever came, because I remember
because we don't do a podcast where we talk about... Oh, that's right. You were gone for a few...
Yeah, exactly. There was that. And then by the time that I got back, it's like, oh, it's G1 season. Shit, we need to talk about that instead.
Yeah. It was, yeah. All right. That was, we're done. We have done the preview for the rest of, we're done with 2018, but this is only the end of side A. There's a side B to this show where we celebrate our third anniversary. So stick around for side B and give us a listen. And we will talk to you in a little bit. So stay tuned.